Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wildes. Chris Broussard is with us on a Monday morning. We got a lot to get to today. There's so much NFL stuff leading up to the draft on Thursday. But if Broussard is here, we got to start with his GOAT, and that's Michael Jordan. So here we go. As of this morning, guys, it's been 40 days now since the NBA was officially shut down. Last night, however, the NBA was front and center. The first two episodes of The Last Dance documentary aired, chronicling Michael Jordan's final season with the Chicago Bulls. No spoiler alerts, please. I'm only two episodes in. Really want to know how it all ends. But Nick, let's kick this off with you. What was your biggest takeaway from last night?
Well, if they missed it, it is about the last season of the Bulls dynasty, but it also takes us back to the very beginning of the Bulls dynasty, or the very beginning of Jordan's run in Chicago, I should say, in the mid-80s. And my biggest takeaway was further confirmation that if you are a transcendent superstar when it comes to basketball, if you are going to be one of the all-time greats, it is instant. Michael Jordan was 23 years old, and he scored 63 points in a playoff game against one of, if not the greatest team ever up to that point, the 86 Celtics. When Kareem was 23 years old in his second year in the league, he won league MVP en route to winning finals MVP. Duncan's 23, and he's finals MVP. Wilt's 23, and he sets a then NBA record 53 points in a playoff game. Go up and down the list. Bill Russell, 23 and a champion. Kevin Durant, 23 and makes his first NBA finals. Kobe Bryant, when he was truly 1A to 1B to Shaq's 1A, 23 years old. LeBron James, the 48 special against Detroit. Well, he was 22, but we should expect that. The point is, though, that all of these guys, there is no, are they going to get there? Is there? I'm not sure. It's if you are that type of player, it is like that. And for the vast majority of those guys, in fact, for all of them, except for Magic, it also was in their second time in the playoffs. One time you figure it out. Second time through the playoffs, you start to take over. And it was a reminder to me, Wilds, that for Jordan, we look at Jordan as being the greatest player ever for some, or certainly at that point, the greatest player ever once he started winning championships. But for the guys he was competing against, Wilds, they looked at him as potentially the greatest player in the league by game 100, by game 120. And that's what we saw last night, Kevin.
Yeah, that's interesting, Nick. I looked back and I was surprised to see so much Roy Williams in the documentary. So I looked at it, I was like, oh, you see Roy Williams and you see Dean Smith and you see Bobby Knight. So out of the most winningest coaches, he had three of the top five. So I thought that part was fascinating. I thought the most interesting thing of the whole documentary was Scottie Pippen's contract. I thought Scottie Pippen taking less money and prioritizing the stability of his family was an honorable decision, even if it proved not to be the correct financial decision. I thought that was fantastic. Here's the Bulls' top six salaries from that season of 97-98. And there you see Pippen way down at the bottom, number six. I also thought off of that contract, when he elects to have surgery, that you started to see how great Phil was. They asked Phil, they said, Phil, are you concerned, or did that upset you that Scottie purposely missed the beginning of the season? He said no. And you saw some real Zen-like qualities from Phil. So I thought Scottie's decision to make the honorable choice to prioritize his family was fascinating, and the Zen master really giving us a little glimpse in what made that team so successful.
Hey, Broussard, you were all over this back then. You covered the NBA back in 97. What was your biggest takeaway from what you saw last night?
My biggest takeaway was that it didn't have to end that early. And early may sound strange to people, yeah, because they obviously won six championships. But that second three-peat team was broken up prematurely. And that is something that bothered me when I was watching this yesterday, because Michael Jordan said it after winning championship number five. We deserve the right to defend what we've built. Let somebody else beat us on the court. Don't let our front office just dismantle us. Scottie Pippen was still fairly young, went to Houston and Portland after that season and had some good years. Jordan was still the best player in the world. You know, Dennis Rodman still has some basketball left in him. You obviously had the great coach in Phil Jackson. And it just bothered me to no end that Jerry Krause destroyed that team before it was time. Now, would they have gone on to win their fourth championship in a row? I don't know, but I would have loved to have seen them play Tim Duncan and David Robinson of the Spurs, which would have been the matchup if they had gotten to the finals in 99. And I tell you this, and I don't want, I know there's going to be a lot of comparisons to the players of today and particularly LeBron James. I don't think we should do that with every little issue. However, when you look at LeBron ushering in this era of player empowerment, you see why. And a lot of people who've criticized him for that should actually appreciate now what he's done when you look at the fact that Jordan, Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen, the way they were treated in that last season in Chicago. For Jerry Krause to say to Phil Jackson, you could go 82-0 and this is your last year, that makes no sense whatsoever. And so Scottie Pippen is, as was said earlier, the 122nd highest paid player in the league. That's horrible. And so you see why LeBron, and don't get mad at LeBron and Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis and these guys who are now taking their future and their destiny into their own hands because they don't think management or ownership will always have their best interest at heart. And we saw that in this documentary.
That's such an interesting point. We are going to discuss that. But, you know, so much of Michael Jordan's personal life has been chronicled. So much of what he did on the court has already been chronicled. And then you see everything play out last night leading up to that final season. Nick, what if anything, surprised you from what you saw?
Well, so two points. One, in quick response to Broussard, which I think was a great point, that we now look at it like it was broken up prematurely. I do wonder if that actually was good for the legend of Michael Jordan that we never saw him lose. Yeah. Because that 98 years, spoiler alert for folks that don't know it, they were teetering. They got taken seven games by a good but far from great Pacers team. They were on fumes in those NBA finals en route to beating the Jazz. So you do feel like had Jerry Krause not broken it up, it would have broken up on its own. And then maybe Jordan isn't the perfect 6-for-6, which I know so many people hold in better regard than if he were 6-for-7 or 6-for-8. But Jenna, to answer your question, what was I most surprised by? And this is there's a famous quote by a fictional character, Rust Cole. It's time is a flat circle. I have a new quote that I hope can gain something close to that notoriety.
All right.
And the quote is this. Old people be lying. Okay? Old people be lying. And here's what I mean.
It's not going to take off.
Zion Williamson comes back. And his first game back, he's on a minutes restriction. And we are told it is the softening of America. It is young folks run amok. And it wasn't like this back in the day. That was a minutes restriction. I watched a game in the mid-80s last night. Michael Jordan was on a second restriction. The GM came down, said 17 seconds, he cannot play. I've heard for the last few years, Broussard, that tanking is a new thing that Daryl Morey and Sam Hinkie and all these analytical people invented, and it's the bane of basketball existence. I watched a team in the mid-80s last year that tried to potentially tank their way out of the playoffs. So to that I say, old people be lying. What is old is new, what is new is old. And Broussard, I put it on you as the resident basketball historian, not the resident old person, but you might be the oldest person on the show, to remind America that it's always been like this, Broussard.
You know what, Nick? I have to give you kudos. That was a great quote you just gave. Old people be lying, because I looked at it the same way. Michael Jordan and Danny Ainge went golfing the day before he scored 63 points against the Celtics. All we hear is, oh, they hated each other, guys, back then. There was no friendship. These guys were arch enemies. Jordan and Magic didn't get along. Jordan and Bird, Jordan hated the Celtics. No, I know Isaiah Thomas, the legend. He would go into the Celtics locker room during the finals before he got there and bask in their winning. go to the Lakers locker room because he was friends with Magic and bask in their winning. He's told me that's how I learned how to win. He was close with Kevin McHale. McHale let him come along for the ride and learn from the Celtics. So, you know, this notion that the players of yesteryear were so tough and hated each other. No, Jordan and Ainge were out golfing. They were golfing buddies, for goodness sake. So Nick is right. Old people be lying. Older people than me.
Oh, God, don't give this any credence.
Wilds, what surprised you?
Well, before I get to my surprise, because I missed it the first time, I need to say total transparency. Congratulations. My wife is an executive producer on the film. She's upstairs. Libster, we're saying nice things about you. And the entire team that made this documentary happen. Like, I've been in sports for 25 years and I've heard about this footage for 20 years. So I've just big kudos to everyone in the entire team that made this happen. My other big surprise, and I think this will play out later in later episodes, was how hard it is to be Michael Jordan. And it's when the audio guy wants an autograph, and at the end of that Paris game, a player comes over like, can I have your armband? And Michael's like, yeah, whatever. I think that he is under an insane microscope, and it's going to play out later in the documentary of how actually difficult it was to live his everyday life.
All right, well, we got two episodes last night, so we have a lot to dive into, which we will get to later in the program. We are going to take a little break.
Here's a message from our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Right now, we cannot be overwhelmed. We have to work to keep our loved ones safe and protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, to stay focused. We have to work to inspire, to innovate, to build new solutions. But for all of this to work, we have to work together. At ZipRecruiter, we connect employers and people every day. But today is different. We are partnering with first responders, government officials, the medical community, the innovators, and the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries to make sure we are finding the right people for the right jobs right now. Let's work together. ZipRecruiter.com/work together.
Back here, first things first, now joined by Brian Westbrook. And guess what? Super 6 is back. FoxBet is offering special contests for the NFL draft coming up this Thursday night. One of the questions for Thursday, Nick's already excited. Which team will draft Tua? Dolphins, Chargers, Jaguars, or any other team? Nick, go ahead, buddy.
Listen, the answer is the Dolphins, and I'm just giving this pick out for free, America, because I I've read the rules. I'm not allowed to win the Super Six twice in one calendar year, and I won it after the Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
Here we go.
So even if I win this one, I'm ineligible. So just go ahead, take it and run with it. Wilds, you haven't won yet, and so just take my pick. I won't even ask for a cut of the money, but the Dolphins is the right pick here, Wilds.
No, but Nick, I think you've had impeccable picks. I'm going to take your pick exactly. I am going to share some of your money, of my earnings, because you deserve it, buddy. You're a fantastic picker, one of the best in the country.
Wow. Thank you. That is awesome.
Wilds.
I love hearing that.
Wilds, see, Jenna, what are you doing?
That's being
Drew
a good
is great.
Teammate.
What are you
he's fantastic.
Doing, Wilds?
He got them all right.
I didn't win anything.
I don't think he's lost a game yet.
Lying to you.
I won the Super Six and the Super Bowl. Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
You won nothing.
I've been there all season long throughout the football season, and I continue to watch Nick pick games every single Sunday, telling everyone in America to just follow his picks and pick the same picks that he picked, and he never won throughout the season except for that Super Bowl game.
There it is.
He has a 50-50 chance during the Super Bowl. How hard could it have been?
Okay. Jenna, you hear that?
Listen to
even Westbrook
America
acknowledges I won the
win.
National Super Six
Never
contest
won.
For the Super Bowl.
No money.
I did.
Won.
I did.
Here we go.
Anyway,
before Thursday's draft, download the FoxBet Super Six app and play for free for a chance to do something Nick has not done. Win $10,000.
Oh,
now that that's on record, it's time to play a little drawing a blank. Here we go. Soon-to-be first overall pick Joe Burrow recently called former first overall pick Peyton Manning pick his brain just a little bit. To sum it up nicely, Peyton told Burrow his rookie year might be rough, it was pretty rough for Peyton. Nick, Peyton Manning's advice to Burrow is blank.
It's refreshing. The advice is just honest, but the conversation to me is what's refreshing. Because I love the fact that Joe Burrow went out of his way to go call Peyton and pick his brain. I think it shows foresight. I think it shows maturity. And I think Joe Burrow is a really sharp, well-put-together kid. Even though I'd take Tua over him, it doesn't say anything about what I think of him as a person. And so I think that the humility to say, let me call someone who's gone number one overall. By the way, Peyton Bryan is the last number one overall pick to have the exact career you would hope a number one overall pick did. So I say it's refreshing, Brian Westbrook.
I think the conversation was perfect. And one of the things that I picked up just reading the comments that Peyton made was that you never want to stop learning. And that brought me back to my rookie year. And going into my rookie year, I was the most athletic player on the field in college. And you think that just continues into the NFL. And that rookie year was a huge learning experience for me because I learned that I just can't outrun people to the edge. I just can't use my speed to get to the outside. I had to set up my blocks. I had to do so many things that NFL running backs do that I wasn't able to do in college. I didn't know about in college. And really, truly, I didn't have to do in college because I was so much of a better athlete than many guys. And so I think the advice to continue to learn and just be in a process of continuous learning throughout your rookie year is perfect and spot on from Peyton Manning.
Well, Jen, I went with G-Force training. If you go on YouTube, you see those people training to be astronauts, and I'm just going to do it quick. They go like that. You know, they're like, ugh. And then they pass out. Man, that's what's going to happen to Joe Burrow. That's what happened to Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning went 3-13 his rookie year. He said he lost more games than he did in high school and college. That's what's going to happen to Joe Burrow. High school and college, Joe Burrow was 62-7 in high school and college. So Joe Burrow's in for a rough ride. It's going to be G-Force training. But remember, next year, Peyton Manning, 13-3. So maybe good times ahead for Joe Burrow, but it's G-Force training for now.
Yep, they played him every single game that year. Let him sit in there, even in the fourth quarter when they were getting blown out, to make sure he really fully understood it, and he did. You're right, 13-3 the next year. Moving on to the Dallas Cowboys now. It appears they are in the draft market for a quarterback, with reported interest in Jalen Hurts, among others. But Stephen Jones doesn't think Dak Prescott should take this as a red flag, saying, quote, I don't think it has anything to do with Dak's contract. Nick, Stephen Jones' comments about drafting a quarterback are blank.
They're counterproductive, but I guess at this point I should expect it. Every single time the Cowboys have a chance to publicly add a little bit of leverage to their side of the ledger in this 15-month ongoing negotiation with Dak Prescott, they undermine their own case. Every single time. Why can't the quote be this, Stephen Jones? Obviously, we love Dak Prescott, and we think we've shown that love by offering him a very lucrative contract extension. Unfortunately, he hasn't taken it. So while we don't want to start thinking about who could be the next quarterback of the future, Dak Prescott has forced our hand. So, of course, we're looking at quarterbacks, including with our first-round pick. That's what any organization would do if they don't have a quarterback under contract. That's what you should have said. Instead, you keep saying this guy who won't take our contract offer is our quarterback of the future and we love him so very much and we don't want to hurt your feelings. It's counterproductive. It's bad negotiating, Stephen Jones. That's my answer, Brian Westbrook.
You know, Nick, I agree with everything you just said, but if I was Dak and I heard these comments from Stephen Jones, I would have been like, I wouldn't have been surprised at all. Listen, Dak, you're a four-year starter. You've won the NFC East 2 of your 4 years, and you're coming off of your best season statistically as a professional, and you still don't have a contract. They allowed you to play your rookie contract out. There's just not many quarterbacks in franchise that would force a guy that has been that good for you to go through these types of situations. So I would be not surprised by the comments. And if I'm Dak, I also would be unfazed. I would be in a situation where I'm like, listen, I have an opportunity with Mike McCarthy, who certainly has been helpful to quarterbacks, to be a much more productive quarterback this season than I have any of my previous seasons, including last year when I had my best season as a pro. And so now I have an opportunity to go make even more money. And if the Dallas Cowboys put me in a situation where they want to just franchise me, I will have a situation and an opportunity to go make money elsewhere if I have to do that, no matter whether they draft a quarterback or not.
Jenna, I wrote in Case Keenum, our personal favorite. I don't think Dak has anything to be worried about from a rookie quarterback. I'd be worried if they brought in a veteran, which it doesn't look like they're going to. Like Nick says, if they wanted leverage, they could go grab Cam. Jameis could come in. Andy Dalton is supposed to be traded on draft day. There's a lot of different ways they can get leverage. They're not interested in it. So a rookie quarterback leaves Dak unfazed.
To your point, Wild, Stephen did go on to say, we're looking at a backup quarterback, a backup situation. Yeah, Case Keenum could easily be anybody's number one, said Wilds and Wolf. Okay, on to Jameis Winston now. He remains a free agent, and former NFL scout Bucky Brooks thinks the Patriots would be a good fit because, quote, Belichick loves taking on former first-round picks as reclamation projects. Nick, Jameis on the Patriots would be blank.
Fascinating. I would be, as a football fan, really interested to see if Belichick and McDaniels and that system and that culture could wring some of the turnovers out of Jameis and just harness the arm talent. Because the arm talent Jameis has would be the most arm talent the Patriots have had at the quarterback position since probably 2016, since Brady was still, you know, an MVP caliber quarterback, certainly 2017. So it would just be a fascinating case study of how much can coaching coach out a player's natural tendency, which for Jameis is to throw the ball to anybody, including people on the other team, Brian.
You know, Nick, I think you're right, but this would
like
be
that part.
This would be totally different for the Patriots as well as for Jameis Winston. When you think about Jameis, he's played an undisciplined style of football his entire career. He's had to go out there and basically win games all by himself because the defense hasn't been very good. But you go to New England, you don't have to go win games. You have to be able to maintain and not lose games. They want to establish a run game. They want to play to the defense a little bit. And I think if they can just calm Jameis down and say, Jameis, take the check down. You don't have to force the ball down the field to win that football game. You'll get a much better quarterback. And so it'll be different for Jameis, but it also would be different for the Patriots.
I'm going with Cam Newton's laws of motion. If we want to take a first-round pick reclamation project, then let's take Cam Newton. I don't care about Jameis's arm talent unless it was the movie Over the Top and we're arm wrestling. If we're going to take a number one pick, please take Cam. This is not hard for everybody. Take Cam or Tua.
Bam, I'm or probably Stidham. The only one that knows okay the theme song too. To Over the Top. All right, we'll keep going.
I know.
On to Patrick Mahomes now.
Meet you halfway.
You do, remember?
Oh.
Winner takes it all.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
that's a good one too.
Had different songs. On to Patty Mahomes now, who's officially passed the GOAT, Tom Brady, wait for it, in NFL merchandise sales. Brady has been number one for 3 years running. So, Nick, Mahomes passing Brady as the NFL's top merch seller is
here we go.
Blank.
It's
just interesting. He's passed him, even though, you know, Brady, you assume, gets the shot in the arm by changing teams. Shockingly, Tampa Bay and Tampa Brady hasn't skyrocketed this up to the top. Hey, I'm just surprised by this. But the answer is Mahomes passing Brady as the NFL's top merchandise seller is foreshadowing of things to come, of course. You know, Mahomes won a league MVP earlier than Brady did. Mahomes won a playoff game younger than Brady and a Super Bowl MVP and a Super Bowl championship, was on a better team earlier. Okay. And so you just feel like it's foreshadowing of all of Tom Brady's accolades at the top of the quarterback mountain are slowly going to be chipped away, Brian, by the most talented quarterback the world has ever seen, who one day, if God willing, will be the greatest quarterback the world's ever seen, Patrick Mahomes. So just another notch in his belt, taking something Tom Brady used to have and putting it in his pocket.
We can go to break.
You know what, Kevin? I kind of feel like we should go to break. We should just give Nick the opportunity to gloat about Patrick Mahomes and his success off the field as well. But I think the truth is that this is appropriate. Patrick Mahomes is the MVP, Super Bowl MVP, just won the championship. And all young quarterbacks are looking up to Patrick Mahomes the same way that as many people did across the country last night, they were watching Michael Jordan in this documentary because they looked up to Michael Jordan as a young man. So I think it's appropriate that Patrick Mahomes, after all the success that he's had these first few years of his career, that to have the number one selling jersey, of course.
Okay. Look, I'm dealing with some personal calamity at my house because when my son throws the ball, he does say, Mahomes, and I say, hey, none of that here. I know we don't live in New England, but still, not too much. You've been watching the show too much, kids. Comeback king, Tom Brady. Number one comebacks, fourth quarter, Peyton Manning. Number two, Tom Brady. So be prepared. Once this Tampa Bay merchandise starts to roll out, Brady will be back on top.
Did you just say he's number two in comebacks and the comeback king? That's interesting. No, he's about to be number two in a lot of things.
Yeah, because
number two in the world.
No, Peyton Manning,
the
comeback
just give
ace.
That a few years,
and then Brady's comeback king.
All right.
Sorry, Jen.
We will discuss during a commercial break. Back here with Chris Broussard. Broussard, the first two episodes of The Last Dance doc aired last night, Michael Jordan's final season with the Chicago Bulls. Among the many interesting details we took away were these two scenes. One, during the 86 playoff series against Boston, you mentioned it earlier, Jordan golfed with then Celtics guard and someone who some might call teen heartthrob, Danny Ainge. And by some, I
think. Oh, God.
And two.
Oh, my God.
Scottie Pippen.
Restart the segment.
Sorry. No. I love the guy. I loved him. Two, Scottie Pippen berating GM Jerry Krause in front of the team and then proceeding to demand a trade. You know, you got to wonder if that kind of behavior would fly these days. Nick, how do you think Jordan's Bulls would be judged today? Feel free to start with the Danny Ainge angle. Either one, really.
Go ahead. I got you. So let's think about this for a moment. What would the headlines be if those first few years in Chicago were going on right now? Well, obviously, in Jenna's hometown in upstate New York, there would be a headline, local woman suffers from some neurological disorder obsessed with Danny Ainge. But set that one aside. The other headlines would be...
I was in high school.
If Michael Jordan's first few years in Chicago were playing out right now, these would be the headlines we would see. Why can't Michael Jordan win more than he loses? The Bulls had losing records each of the first 3 years. That second year, the famous 86 team that when Jordan scored 63, the headline going into the playoffs would be this. Are the 86 Bulls the worst playoff team ever? They had the worst record in modern NBA history. They won 30 games to make the playoffs. And then my favorite one would have been if it was today's media, Broussard, covering those early Jordan Bulls in 87 after they got swept out of the playoffs again after a game where Jordan was 9 of 30. When they hadn't won a playoff game since his rookie season. They'd lost 7 consecutive playoff games, swept 2 years in a row. You know this article would have been written. Should the Bulls trade Michael Jordan? Can't win this way. Can't win a championship with hero ball. That would absolutely be in today's media climate. People would be saying, got to trade him. Ball hog, ego, can't win, can't beat the good teams, need more team ball. So, Broussard, I believe that's how those 80s Bulls would have been covered in today's media climate.
Why do I feel like Nick is making a LeBron is the GOAT argument here?
No. Whoa. I didn't say LeBron's name.
Fairness, let me say, that team you said was the worst playoff team ever. Remember, Jordan only played like 17 games that year. So that they would not have gone down as the worst team ever had he played the full season. But ultimately, Nick, your point is correct. And Kevin mentioned earlier how tough it was to be Michael Jordan and the pressure that he was on under day to day just because he was such a huge superstar. And I agree with Kevin on that point in 1996 or 98. But that is not even close to the amount of scrutiny that Michael Jordan would get today. It's not even close. There were no shows like this. There were no daily debate shows where they looked at every single, not just
game, every single possession, every single potential game-winning shot that a player missed or made. I mean, it would have been incredible, the scrutiny that Jordan would have been under today with social media, the national debate shows, the national radio shows. Most sports radio shows at that time were local shows. So, and Michael Jordan is the type, he's not the type of personality that loves always being in the spotlight. You know, we saw that he was a little burnt out at times from the scrutiny and the constant media attention during his day. And you see when he retired, he's not a guy that, you know, went into the studio booth and became a famous broadcaster, and he doesn't do a lot of interviews. That's just not who he is. So it would have been more difficult for Jordan to play in today's media climate. The gambling issue would have been front and center. I mean, he actually went to Atlantic City in the middle of the playoffs series with the Knicks to gamble. That would have become a huge story. There are more leaks than ever today because it's so much easier to be in constant contact with GMs and executives and coaches and players throughout the league because of the technology. And so the way Jordan treated his teammates, all the issues with the front office, those would be stories now. Back then, yeah, people knew a little bit about it, but it wasn't nearly as covered as it would be today. And so all of those stories becoming huge, that would have created further distractions and potentially distractions that could have derailed that team. So it would have been even tougher for them to win those championships today because all of these things would have come out. You know, we saw Michael Jordan being interviewed about Scottie Pippen's contract situation. And after a couple questions, he said, all right, let's talk about basketball now. That would have remained a constant topic on that Bulls team until Scottie Pippen got back, if not longer. And so, again, would have been a potential distraction that could have derailed the team.
And you play that off nicely. He was actually a lot more frustrated when he said it, too. He was like, anyone have questions about the game? You saw that it was starting to get to him. But Wilds, we know it's a different time now. It's a different league now, certainly different players. How do you think Jordan's Bulls would be judged today?
I thought what Broussard said was fascinating because I see two sides of it. On the one side, with the no social media pressure, I thought it was telling when he went back to North Carolina in rehab and started playing one-on-one, two-on-two, five-on-five, and then he returns to Chicago. He's like, they didn't know. So it's just fascinating that that could ever happen, that Michael Jordan is playing five-on-five basketball at the University of Carolina, and everyone's like, University of North Carolina, everyone's like, I don't know. We didn't know. We had no intel on it. The thing about, I had a different takeaway from the Pippen interview, Broussard. I thought it was interesting to see how many microphones were in his face. There was about, I don't know, 30 microphones in his face. And it felt like, although there wasn't social media, maybe Jordan, if he played now, would have more distance. That he would be like, you know what, I'll grant two interviews. Everybody stay away. But you don't see 30 microphones against in the locker room anymore. So I thought that was a different amount of pressure. That was one of my takeaways, Chris. Did you see that, or did you have a different take?
That's a good point. The access to players back then was greater. I mean, you know, it wasn't too long before that players were actually flying charter flights and the media would fly on the same flights as the players. So you had a lot more access. It wasn't too long before that the media could actually watch the entire practice. So you would have seen when a Michael Jordan early in his career, not toward the end. The media had been banned from all but the last 10 minutes at that point. But early in Jordan's career, you would have seen him going at teammates the way he did. You would have seen him having fights with teammates. And all of that would have been reported. You know, so you make a good point in that today the players don't have to talk as much as they used to. So Jordan may have been able to just say, look, I'm not talking today. And that would have been that.
And let's be honest, guys were protected differently. You saw in that clip, I don't know who the writer was, but you saw when Jordan's walking out of the locker room, you see a guy say to him, "Hey, Michael, I really hope you liked the piece." That was a guy who had written an article about him that was searching for Jordan's approval on it to hope to get more access from Michael in the future. The media environment's just different. I'm not saying it's better or worse, but it's just different. There was a period of time where it was, especially in baseball writing, if we want to go back 70, 80 years, where it was myth-making, creating these larger-than-life stories, which is why to this day, the legend of Babe Ruth will always, even though he was maybe the greatest baseball player ever, the legend outstrips the performance. And Jenna, there is a similar factor, if you will, with Jordan, especially because Jordan had made it very clear when a book was written about him that he did not like, he cut that writer out entirely, and everyone was on notice that, listen, you're going to handle me the way I want to be handled, or you won't be handling me at all. And I just don't know if that would be doable in today's media environment.
Well, that's an interesting point.
I wonder how happy Nick Wright would be covering Michael Jordan.
you're talking about the Jordan Rules by Sam Smith, which was a great book. But that type of stuff is coming out in the media now. Every other week, there'd be stories about that in the media, not just in a book that came years later. So you're absolutely right. But Jordan was criticized, Nick, earlier. And all the things you said, he can't win. He's just a scorer. He's a ball hog. He doesn't play team basketball. A lot of that stuff was said back then as well.
All right, let's make a little transition here. It's an easy one from Jordan to LeBron. Nick hasn't devoted what appears to be his entire life to creating a list of the Kings' top 10 playoff performances. We can't judge him. It's not bad. We're at the halfway point here. Nick, which game do you have at number five?
Number five gets us to one of the three biggest games of his career, even though it wasn't one of the three best games of his career. His fifth best playoff game. It's game five is number five against the Warriors in 2016. 41-16, 7-3-3. Let me take you back in time a bit. This was supposed to be the coronation game for the 73-win Warriors. They were being asked before the game if they were better than the Showtime Lakers, much less better than the 2016 Cavs. Yet in this game, LeBron James, if the 41 points stand out, but the three was just as important. Three blocks in this game, two of which were a sign of things to come. One on Steph Curry in transition, which he would then duplicate in game six shortly thereafter. Steph would get ejected and his wife would accuse the league of being rigged. The other, and it's forgotten, on Andre Iguodala on a full fast break layup attempt that gets swatted against the glass. That would be a foreshadowing of the greatest defensive play in the history of the league. People call this the Draymond game because Draymond wasn't there and LeBron scored 41 points. LeBron then, of course, scores 41 the following game with Draymond there. But what gets forgotten about this game is this. Klay Thompson was lights out in the first half, scoring 26. LeBron matched him with 25, keeping the Cavs in it. Then LeBron and Kyrie took over in the third, lead the Cavs to a 15-point victory in an elimination game. Stave off elimination against the Warriors, only to have the next couple games, well, we know how those went. So number five for LeBron, 41-16, 7-3-3 against the 73-win Warriors in Oracle.
All right, Nick, good stuff. Back here, first things first, time for stories to start your morning. Peter King's latest mock draft has the Patriots trading up the 23rd to the 13th pick to get their next quarterback, perhaps, Tua Tagovailoa. Luckily for New England, Adam Schefter is reporting the Niners, get this, the Niners are fielding calls and open to trading their 13th overall pick. Pieces are all falling into place. Nick.
Let's go.
Here we go. Is this your worst nightmare?
Listen, America.
Take down the posters.
There are these stories the Patriots were going to trade into the top five. I disregarded them. They were meaningless because they were never going to be able to trade into the top five. But trading from 23 to 13 is very plausible. Teams do that type of trade all the time. In fact, That's the type of trade that allowed the Chiefs to select Patrick Mahomes, trading from the 20s into the low teens, that right at 10. So my wife always says, I tend not to believe in these types of things. Put that into the universe. I am really sick of people putting this into the universe. This idea that Tua's going to fall and the Patriots are going to be there to catch him. This is not how this story is supposed to go. And I am angry at everyone that postulates it could go this way, Wilds. I don't even want to consider it.
Oh, put it. But Katana, can we put it into the universe? I had an inkling this was going to happen on Friday. I was like, Katana, can we make a special Photoshop for Nick? Oh, put it in the universe.
No.
And he's pointing at you, Nick, right? Put it in the universe. Let's go. It's
13.
In the universe now.
Oh.
It's fantastic. Put it in the universe. It's in the universe now, Westbrook. I love it. I don't want him to fall. I'm rooting for him. But if he falls right into the loving arms of Bill Belichick, Brian, you love it. Admit it. It's great. It's great for the league.
You know,
I think
show.
It's fantastic for everybody.
I think all fans around the NFL would absolutely hate it and think the NFL is rigged if Tua somehow falls down to the Patriots. I will say this, though. I think it's a perfect fit. I think going from Nick Saban to Bill Belichick would be great for Tua. I think that, you know, Bill Belichick has a team-first attitude. It's all about winning. Same thing with Nick Saban. It's not about the numbers. And you want to play the right way. Tua knows how to do that. He knows how to be a leader in the face of a program. So to me, it's a great fit. I don't know that the Patriots, with the 23rd pick, have enough to get up to 13. They, you know, the next pick is not until 87. And so I don't know that they have the wherewithal to be able to get up to the 13th pick. But if they do, I mean, this would be perfect, and it would upset the entire NFL.
You know what? They owe us for Jimmy G.
It's
a handshake deal.
That would make Nick feel better. All right, moving on to Odell Beckham Jr. and the conflicting reports regarding the Browns' wideout. Some have him traded. Some have him firmly planted in Cleveland. Some have him firmly planted but eventually traded. Some have him for... No, those are actually the only reports we've heard. Well, Westbrook, what do you think Odell's future in Cleveland looks like?
You know, here's my thought process. I understand why Odell is always... in these trade conversations, because he's the best player on the team and there's value. I mean, they're thinking maybe we could get a first and a second or a first and a third for Odell. But if I'm Cleveland, I have to understand that I don't know what happens in the draft. I don't know if this first round pick that I get or second round pick that I get for Odell, if they're going to pan out to be half the player that Odell Beckham Jr. is. To me, the thought has to always be, the guy that you know that's going to be successful in the NFL and that has proven that already is better than the draft pick. I remember when we had T.O. on our team, and we didn't trade him. We ended up releasing him, things like that. But why would you ever want to go get someone else other than the best player at that position? We know that Odell is a top five talent in the NFL. They just have to continue to find a way to get him the football a little bit more and win football games. If they're winning football games, none of this conversation about Odell being traded or anything else would even come into play, because they're winning games with Odell Beckham Jr. on the team.
Nick, I don't think we should do this story in the show anymore. Honestly, this is all Dave Gettleman's fault, because there's no way to tamp down the brush fire of, is Odell going to be traded? Because if you say you're going to trade him, you're trading him. If you say you're not going to trade him, you're trading him. If you say absolutely we didn't sign him to trade him, maybe you're trading him. There's no win for us. Don't trade Odell. I don't know how to analyze this or do anything with it, since it's all just a web of lies and deceit. I'm over it. I'm over the whole thing, Nick. Mm. I'm moving my hands too much.
Well, this is just further confirmation of what I said Friday coming true, which is that it does not matter that all the major players in this have said it's not true. People like talking about Odell. They like talking about Odell disproportionately in a negative light, so it's going to continue to be brought up. My friend Mike Florio, and I like Mike a lot, Mike wrote an article saying it's very telling that the Browns denied this, but they denied it after 24 hours. It would have been just as telling if you wanted it to be that they immediately denied it, or 36 hours later. The fact is, no one was talking about this until a radio reporter in New York said he heard this was happening. And I'm not saying he doesn't have sources at all. I wouldn't do that. But it's a very odd genesis of, a Browns-Vikings trade to be the new afternoon drive guy at The Fan. But people like smearing Odell and like throwing this out there so we can say there's always so much noise surrounding Odell. And so that's what this is. And so, I think he's going to play for the Browns this year, and I think he's going to be awesome, Jenna.
I am not smearing Odell when I say smoke, fire. Leave it at that. Let's add some hoops now.
There's no smoke.
The Chicago Bulls tweeted out an interesting scenario this weekend. We've had two stories on it in like 4 days. There's some smoke. Okay, here's the scenario, guys. Tell me what you think. You're offered $5 million to score against Michael Jordan one-on-one. You're given 10 chances. This is prime MJ. If you fail, you won't be able to hear music ever again. Brian, you're up first. Would you lace up?
You know what, Jenna? There's no doubt about it. I would absolutely lace up against MJ. This is something that you can talk to your kids and your family about forever. But I have a strategy here, and I've thought about this so many times. First of all, MJ is one of these competitors. When he looks at you, he can tell whether you're a player or not. So your strategy has to be you go out there and you don't look very good. So you wanted the first couple of possessions out of the 10, you got to kind of fumble the ball out of bounds, turn the ball over. So now on the third or fourth possession, he's not taking you serious. So at this point, now you turn it on and you surprise him. You try to get past him, get an easy layup without getting it blocked. I mean, it's going to be hard to do no matter what, but you got to kind of lull him to sleep and then score. And I think that you have a possibility there.
I mean, that's not bad. That's not bad, Brian. But if anyone on the internet thinks they can score in a trillion chances, they are wrong. A trillion chances. Most people shoot 40% in an empty gym by themselves. And now you've got Michael Jordan guarding you and you think you can hit one shot? It's impossible. A million trillion times, it is never, ever happening. Nick?
Okay.
Don't say you can do it, Nick.
Obviously
don't
wrong.
Say you can do it. For the love
listen,
of God, I'm going to take my
okay,
mic
first of all, of
these.
Course, Wilds. Of course I'm taking the challenge. But it's multi-layered here. Here's layer one. They said prime MJ. Wait, Wilds, don't leave yet. They said prime MJ. Okay. Right. Prime MJ means we're talking 91, 92. He made $2 million a year at that point in time. So my first option is I'm taking it and I'm offering to cut him in on it. I'm like, hey, bro, if you let me score, we can each chop up $5 million, $2.5 million each. If he says no to that, then I'm going the Westbrook strategy, but I'm not trying to drive on him. I'm just chucking from deep. But worst case scenario, I lose music. Here's my hottest take. Music, wildly overrated. Not even a top seven entertainment option. You want to know your seven best entertainment options? Sports, television, movies, books, podcasts, video games, regular games. I'm going to be without music. Who the hell needs music these days? Wildly overrated. Not even worried about it. So maybe I win $5 million. Maybe I lose music. Who the hell cares, Jenna?
Don't let Nick hear the music ever again. We got to go. That's it for today. Back here tomorrow morning. Until then, stay safe, everyone.
The 40s musicless outro. Music.